Good morning. I'm Lisa Davis. Welcome to It's Your Health. Today we'll be talking about sensory processing disorder with Dr. Lucy Jane Miller, Executive Director of SPD Foundation and STAR Center, the first comprehensive SPD research program nationwide. Dr. Miller is also author of Sensational Kids, Hope and Help for Children with Sensory Processing Disorder, SPD, and her name is synonymous with sensory research, education, advocacy, and treatment. Dr. Miller has been featured on NBC's Today Show and ABC's 2020, in the New York Times, and numerous other popular and professional publications. She's the author of more than 60 articles and/or chapters in scientific and professional journals, magazines, and textbooks, and is a frequent presenter or speaker at conferences and workshops worldwide. She has received more than 30 funded awards and grants to further research on SPD and other childhood disabilities and has received many prestigious awards for her work. Dr. Miller, it is an honor to have you on the program.
Thank you so much, Lisa. What a nice introduction that was.
Well, you are wonderful and honest. We're just so thrilled to have you here.
Really appreciate it, too.
Well, terrific. If we can start, if you can tell us, what is sensory processing disorder?
You know, there are all sorts of technical definitions, but let me just put it simply. Sensory processing disorder is difficulty perceiving sensation accurately and responding appropriately. So to you and me, that means that your child might become startled, cover their ears when they hear a loud noise, melt down in grocery stores from the sensory stimulation, or have trouble playing with other children.
Okay. Yeah, my daughter has a lot of those issues, and I know my audience knows this because I mention it quite frequently, and it's nice to get education out there to other parents who might also be wondering, why is my child so sensitive, or why are they, you know, picky eaters, or why do their tags bother them? It's that sort of stuff as well.
That's exactly correct. And actually, most parents don't really know it's sensory. They think it's behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, a lot of parents think it's something they're doing.
Oh.
When it's the nervous system of the child.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then they end up, other people don't understand, and there's a lot of blame and a lot of guilt. So it's
exactly.
So important that we're getting the word out. Now, Dr. Miller, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got involved with SPD and your work with Dr. Jane Ayers?
Yes, well, I was fortunate enough to be in OT school, occupational therapy school, that is, when Dr. Ayers wrote her first book. And I was very interested in sensation because as a child I had had some sensory problems myself. And so when her book came out, it was like a revelation to me. And I called her up and I told her I was going to spend the rest of my life studying sensory integration and would it be possible for me to study with her? And she said, well, young lady, I really don't think you're going to spend the rest of your life studying sensory integration, but... And one thing led to another, and I was able to get an educational grant that allowed me to study with her for the summer, 12 weeks.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah, it was a great experience. She was a wonderful scholar, maybe one of the most brilliant people I have ever known, that's for sure. But then she'd turn around and be on a scooter board on the floor playing with kids. So she was just an incredible clinician and a wonderful person.
So did she start the actual occupational therapy where you're actually doing the play with the children then?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes, she did. She was the first one to diagnose the disorder. She actually created the equipment. Now, that equipment you see in every McDonald's, you see it like all over the place. She made all that equipment by hand.
Wow.
And she should have just patented it. And then we'd all have plenty of money for research.
Oh, yeah.
And so she did the first assessment. She did, she was definitely the originator.
And at that time, it was called something different. Sensory integration disorder?
Dysfunction.
Is that right? Or dysfunction.
Mm-hmm.
And when did it become called sensory processing disorder?
Well, some people still call it sensory integration dysfunction. And to tell you the truth, I really don't care myself what it's called as long as we get it, you know, established. But we use the term sensory processing disorder for a couple of reasons. SID, sensory integration dysfunction, we were getting a lot of referrals for SIDS mm-hmm. because of the SID. Also, sensory integration has another meaning in neuroscience.
Mm-hmm.
It's when the neurons relate to each other, when they talk to each other, so to speak. And so it was getting very confusing between sensory integration, multisensory integration, which is neurological, SIDS disorder, and also the diagnosis was the same label as the treatment. So it was also confusing. We did some focus groups across the nation in the early 2000s, and there was just kind of a consensus that processing would be an easier word to understand.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that makes a lot of sense. Now, when is the best time to identify SPD in children?
Definitely early, because the brain is more plastic, and if you have early identification, then you can have early treatment. Also, you know, with kids, they establish a feeling of who they are. And if by second grade you feel like you're a loser, you have a good chance of being a loser. But if we can turn you into a winner, you're going to be a winner for your whole life. Mm-hmm. So the sooner we can identify children, the more effective the treatment, and the more likely it is also to create family harmony. Mm-hmm. Because I'm sure you know there are all kinds of family things that happen when you have a kid with a disability.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I know that very well.
And I tell people when I lecture, you know, sensory processing disorder is not just about children. It's the whole family that's affected.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's true. And it's funny when you mentioned about feeling like a loser. I know that SPD also has to do with motor planning problems. And I never got diagnosed, but as a child, I mean, they would fight over who got stuck with me on the, you know, for sports. I mean, it would literally be like, we don't want her, you take her all the time.
Yeah.
And then I stopped trying. I thought, you know, I'm not good at any sports. Why should I even try? And now when I talk to people and I tell them I ended up becoming a personal trainer and exercise physiologist and blah, 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 and all the health stuff, they're like shocked. They're like, but you couldn't even throw a ball. It's like, well, I still can't throw a ball, but I'm still, you know. But it really does. It really makes a difference, you know. And so I'm really glad you brought that up.
You know, we talk about reframing the disorder so that people understand it's physiological, it's not psychological, it's not bad behavior, and it definitely is not parental.
No.
So that reframing, if it can happen when a child is 3 or 4 or 5, it's going to be much more effective. The youngest child we've ever seen was 5 months.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, we saw her because she either was asleep or awake and screaming.
Wow.
And screaming and screaming. And the parents were thinking of a divorce, and the 4-year-old brother was falling apart. And, of course, the baby is screaming all the time. And the doctors had ordered a G-tube for her. You know what that is?
Yeah, that has to be. Yeah. If you want to explain it, though, in case people listen,
well,
aren't familiar.
It's a plastic tube that goes into your stomach, and they feed you through it. Because she was screaming so much, she couldn't eat.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So we said, please, you know, just give us 2 weeks, only 2 weeks, and then you can decide whether to have the G-tube. Well, in 2 weeks, she was eating. Why? Because it wasn't anything about eating. She couldn't tolerate at all being touched. So we set her up so that when she was eating, nobody was touching her, and the bottle was propped up, and she started to eat. And we saw her for a total of 2 months. And by the end of the 2 months, she had never rolled over. She had never anything. She was rolling, crawling. She was reaching out and exploring objects. And we've never seen her since.
Wow, that's incredible.
Mm-hmm.
That must happen a lot, where you get, you know, they say the baby has colic, and then they don't. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Now, what's a fussy baby? Let me ask you, you know, a fussy baby? That's a baby whose sensory needs are not being met. Something's not right.
Mm-hmm.
If they don't get born fussy.
I never liked that word. People would always use it about my daughter, and I'm like, call her something else. I don't like that word. But she was challenging, I'll say that, you know.
Exactly.
That fussy word. Never cared for that. Now, what should parents be aware of that might indicate their child has SPD?
You know, there are sensory issues, but generally parents are more aware of the behavioral issues. Mm. And let me tell you just a tiny bit about both.
Sure.
First of all, there are several different types of sensory processing disorder, which makes it a little confusing when you're not a professional.
Mm-hmm.
But one is called sensory over-responsive, and those children withdraw from touch or smells or sounds. They cry when they hear loud noises. Mm-hmm. There's sensory under-responsive, and those children don't even notice pain. They don't notice when their name is called. I noticed one of your guests last week. I think it was
Ida. Wow. I was about Ida. To bring that up. Yep.
Yeah, because her child fell down the stairs and didn't even notice.
Oh my gosh.
You know, that's sensory unaware.
Yeah.
Then we have sensory seeking. These are the children that are in your face and in your space and all over you and all over every other kid, and they can't, and they're not ADHD, by the way.
I was about to say, I bet they often get misdiagnosed with ADHD.
Exactly. Pop them on meds, mm-hmm. You know. Oh, I know how to fix this. And then, of course, there's the sensory motor problems like you were talking about.
Yeah.
Several types of those where kids are awkward and clumsy.
That's me.
and then the hardest one, but a very important one, is called sensory discrimination disorder.
Okay.
And that is difficulty interpreting information. So visually, you cannot tell a B from a D. Auditory, you can't tell the word cat from cap.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So tactily, you can't put your hand in your purse and feel your keys. You have to see them. And that's a discrimination disorder. So I wouldn't expect parents at all to know those things, but there can be a variety of different behaviors is what my point is.
Okay. Now, if the parent suspects that, should they take their child to an occupational therapist? Is that the
yes.
first step?
Well, actually, the first step is the physician.
Oh, the physician.
Because
okay.
you always want to rule out any kind of syndromes or mm-hmm. any kind of neurodevelopmental disorders of another nature.
Okay.
There are many physicians nowadays who have been trained about sensory processing disorder.
Mm-hmm.
But if you get to a physician who thinks it's a lot of myths and magic,
yeah.
you know, then you might have to go to an occupational therapist without the support of your doctor. Or you might find another doctor.
Yeah,
you know,
we went through several.
Yeah.
It's tough out there to find one that understands.
It is, but it's so important to have a doctor that understands
yes.
because you need that medical support for your child as well.
Exactly. That makes a lot of sense. So they would go to hopefully you'll have your physician. You
mm-hmm.
know. And now, is there any sort of database or anything for physicians that have more knowledge about it, sensory processing disorder or anything like that?
We do have a database. It's
mm-hmm.
called the Treatment Directory.
Okay.
And it's on our website, which is www.spdfoundation.net.
Mm-hmm.
And in that treatment directory, we have 10 different types of professionals, including OTs, PTs, speech, and, of course, physicians,
okay.
pediatricians. But we don't have as many pediatricians signed up on there as we would like to. We'll have to do a drive.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, or have parents and people call into us and tell us that, you know, they love their pediatrician and here he is and maybe he could sign up himself. It's going to be a little hard to get all these people to sign up, but we're mm-hmm. working on it.
Well, I think that's great. I mean, just to have that for a parent to even go and check, mm-hmm. and then they can, if there's not one in their area, they can maybe call one that's on the list and see if they
mm-hmm.
know somebody. You know, word of mouth really helps a lot.
Well, here's another thing they could do. They could check and see if there's a parent group in their area.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, we have parent groups all over the country, in Canada and 5 other countries. Those are on our website also, and they're called SPD Parent Connections.
Okay.
And there's nothing like another parent to tell you a great doctor.
Oh, that's for sure. That definitely helps a lot. Now, after the physician, they would go to the OT, and what
right.
would the OT do?
Well, preferably they would get a multidisciplinary eval.
Okay.
Let me say that slower. Multidisciplinary evaluation, which means you'd have a number of different evaluators, like speech therapy, maybe physical therapy if they had a motor problem, possibly psychology. The reason you want to do that, and you want to do that early, is to make sure that what you're diagnosing is the correct thing.
Okay.
Because a lot of these have behaviors that overlap. But definitely there needs to be an occupational therapist in the multidisciplinary team. And some people do go just to an OT for an evaluation.
Okay.
When they go to that evaluation, preferably, I mean, what we like to see is a combination of a standardized test. That's a test that gives you a score, clinical observations, and a lot of emphasis on parent reports.
Okay. All right. Now, I was wondering about what treatment looks like once they get assessed and they're diagnosed. That's where the play comes in and the different activities to get the child comfortable with things they're not familiar with or comfortable
with. Exactly. Yep. And, you know, I was training residents down here at the medical school for quite a few years, and they'd come over, we'd look through the one-way mirror, and they'd say, gosh, they're just playing. Because that's what it does look like. Like the OT is just playing with a child, but actually a really well-trained OT is challenging the child at every minute and at the same time making sure they're successful with every activity.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to explain in a short amount of time, but what you try to do is to figure out which of the seven sensory systems is affected and how that affects their functioning, like their memory, their attention, things like that.
Okay.
And then, so you're always working on both the level of sensation and the level of function.
Okay.
Another thing about OT that some people don't really realize is how relationship-driven it is. In other words, social participation or interacting with other kids is generally every single one of these kids have a problem with it.
Yeah.
So a lot of what treatment is working on sensation, but also working on developing a really solid relationship basis so the child relates. And I should say, in our center at least, we always do the treatment with the parents there.
Oh, okay.
And the parent participates in the treatment. They don't watch. So it's a way of making sure that you're not just seeing the child. What good does that do?
I see.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
We want you, the parent, to know everything we know.
Yeah.
So you're there, and we work with you and the child together so that you can go home. And it's not like I send you home with a bunch of exercises, but you go home with a new way of being with your child.
Mm-hmm. Now, you know, it's funny because when my daughter went, she used to hate having her hands dirty, and she would play in the dirt for a few minutes. And literally, she'd, like, get her hand dirty, and she'd go, Mommy, go in the house, get a paper towel, put water on it, and bring it to me now and wipe my hands. I'd be like, you know, she's, like, 2 years old. Just had to. And then, you know, I take her to OT, and she's doing the finger painting and the stuff. And, you know, I send the photos to everybody, and they're, you know, I think they were thinking, oh, that's great. Oh, wow, she's finger painting, but what is that? And so exactly what you're saying, that's what she was doing. And now, I mean, you could get that. Her hands are always dirty. She could care less, you know. So it's funny, but I wanted to mention that, you know, I understand that, you know, thanks to you and your hard work, that SPD now appears in two diagnostic manuals, the ICLD's Diagnostic Manual for Infancy and Early Childhood and the Diagnostic Classification 0-3, and that it's under consideration for the inclusion in the 2012 revision of the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, the DSM-4. Now, why is that so important, and how will that help?
That is such a good question, and we've put so much time and effort into this. First of all, I have to back up just a step and that the reason we are able to submit it for diagnostic consideration is because those decisions are based on research. And in the last 10, 15 years, there's just been a huge amount of research. So there are a lot of people who will say to you, well, sensory integration, there's no research. And I like to say to them, oh, that's so 80s. Because
get
those
with the
people,
program.
What's with that? Because they don't understand. They haven't kept up. And a lot of this research has come out in the last, you know, 5 years. But the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, and there's another one with another really long name, called the International Classification of Diseases. Those two books are the ones that give you little numbers that allow you to submit for insurance. When, you know, when you go to the doctor and they give you that super bill with, and they have something circled on it.
Yeah.
There's always a number, 98573.
Mm-hmm.
That number comes from one of those two diagnostic manuals.
Okay.
And that's what makes it, quote, real.
I see.
So in addition to insurance and being able to get treatment and having, you know, something that's legitimate, it gives the parents and everybody around them the knowledge that the child has a real disorder.
Okay.
There was a time before autism, believe it or not.
Yeah, and I, and actually, I wanted to ask about that, that a lot of people assume that if a child has SPD, they have autism, or are they the same thing, or can you have one without the other?
Yeah, that's another question, but we'll get there in just a second.
Definitely.
But to go back to the first one, I mean, autism was refrigerator mothers.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and ADHD was hyperkinetic.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, autism was also early schizophrenia. Nobody knew what autism was. There wasn't a word for it. Nobody had defined it. So that's what SPD is like now in the sense, not that it's autism, but it's like autism in the sense that it isn't considered real by many people.
That is such a shame because it is so real. And
it
people
is.
Need to know that.
And if we get it in the diagnostic manual, all of a sudden that makes it real.
And to get it in there, is it going to take research funds? What can people listening do to help with this mission? How can we get it in there?
The only way to get it in there is to do good research. And to do really high-level research, you need funding.
Okay.
So we, of course, have applied to NIH and many other places for funding, and we've gotten a few, definitely, but we've also been able to start a scientific work group of people at Harvard and Yale and Duke and about 20 people on the scientific work group who are all doing studies related to this, and we have managed to get them funded. So that is a huge effort, and we do have some really fun new things happening, like we have a program happening in October where we're hoping to get a sensory weekend where parents and therapists can see if they can get either a movie theater or a big auditorium or something like that donated. And then there's a wonderful new movie called Graham's Story.
Mm-hmm.
It's written by Eric Lintower.
Okay.
It's a great 50-minute film. We're going to... All these places are going to get that film. They're going to have a parent to tell a story, and then they're going to get a film from our foundation, which is short, about 3 to 5 minute film. Put that all together as a little program and have a weekend of it, and hopefully that will bring in some funds.
Oh, that's terrific.
Yeah, so people could get involved in that kind of thing if they want to.
Now, is there a place if people wanted to write checks and, donate to?
Oh, sure, of course. The foundation... Sensory Processing Disorder Foundation, the website, very easy to get involved. In fact, if people listening to the show are interested in just getting our newsletter, which is very informative, comes out 4 times a year, if they just put in their email address, that's all for free. Lots of information for free on the website. Our library has over 100 articles in it that can be downloaded. So that's also where they can find out about the parent support groups.
Oh, okay. That's awesome. Now, I wanted to go back to, SPD and autism, they are separate things, right?
Yes.
And a lot of people get confused. Now, for example, my daughter just got diagnosed with Asperger's, and kids with Asperger's have sensory issues, but is that necessarily SPD? It's very confusing. I'm still trying to, trying to figure it out. And I'm sure there's other parents out there who have, when your child has multiple diagnoses, it gets a little confusing.
The reason it's so hard with autism and Asperger's is that almost every child with autism and probably every child with Asperger's. I mean, I've never seen a child with Asperger's syndrome who did not have significant sensory problems.
Okay.
It's because all the children with Asperger's and most of the children with autism have sensory problems that people get confused.
Yes.
The thing is that most kids who have sensory problems do not have autism.
Okay.
And what is the difference? Well, the difference is in the definition of autism, which includes their ability to socialize and have a social connectedness with other people, the communication ability, the stereotypical movement patterns. All of those are features of autism that are not features of sensory processing disorder.
Okay. I see.
Does that make sense to you?
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. It's just, you know, I'm on one of the, I'm on several different parent support groups, and it's just amazing how many, you know, when I started, you know, my daughter had, you know, like, you know, you have the GT for the gifted, and then you have the SPD, and then you have the AS for Asperger's, and, I was joking, you know, with my husband saying, you know, there's going to be like 10 things soon, and everybody else too. It's like they say their kids, they have a nickname, and then there's like 8 different initial things afterwards, and it's just, it seems like they definitely have more than one diagnosis at times.
And you know what? The reason is the diagnostic manual is based on behaviors.
Mm.
There's no genetics. There's no biological markers for these disorders.
Okay.
And the behaviors overlap.
Yes.
So you can have ADHD and sensory processing disorder because the behaviors overlap.
Okay.
50 years from now, we'll be able to make these diagnoses with some kind of a chip.
That would be really nice.
Yeah, that would help a lot.
Oh,
really,
yeah,
a lot.
Certainly would. I also, we have to go to a couple minutes, but I just want to mention that your book is phenomenal, Sensational Kids, Hope and Help for Children with Sensory Processing Disorder. And I love how you used, I think there's 5 different stories of different children,
yeah,
and you follow
mm-hmm.
them from morning until bedtime.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's over-responsive, under-responsive, and it just, other types of sensory processing disorder. And it's easy to read. It's a really great book. So I encourage people to go out there and get it.
That's so nice of you to say. Well, I wrote it for to make it easy. I didn't want it full of a bunch of words that people didn't understand. So, and, you know, I mean, there's a couple of points. One is sensational kids.
Yes.
These kids are great. You know, first of all, there are little professors that teach us everything about the disorder, you know. And for you, they're your life, you know. So, and then the other thing that's important is help and hope. Both of those words,
mm-hmm.
because people are out there by themselves and they feel hopeless, but there's so much we can do for these kids.
That is wonderful. Well, I hate to have to end the show, but we got to have you back. You were so phenomenal. And again, I'm just so honored to have had you on, and you were
Thank
such a
you.
Joy, and your information is wonderful. And everyone, go to the website. It's if you go to my website, www.itsyourhealthradio.org. It has all the information to get in touch with Dr. Miller. Send checks, write letters, do what you can. Get her book. It's awesome. Dr. Miller, thanks again.
Thank you, Lisa.
Next week, we'll be joined by the wonderful Carol Kranowitz, the award-winning author of The Out of Sync Child, The Good Enough's Get in Sync, and The Out of Sync Child Has Fun, as well as many other book chapters and magazine articles. For more information, again, go to itsyourhealthradio.org. Have a great week and keep being healthy. Bye-bye.